I'm Phil Reed from Steve Jackson Games, and you're listening to Morris's unofficial tabletop RPG talk.
This week, Morris, PJ, and Jessica bring you up to date with all the tabletop RPG news, including the resignation of Wizards of the Coast president Cynthia Williams, Hasbro searching for a new partner for Baldur's Gate 4, a new meta in Pathfinder, and more, plus a brand new sketch about the importance of cabbages. This week on Morris's unofficial tabletop RPG talk.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Grimlick's Animal Avatars and Familiars for personages of a magical or sorcerous persuasion. Wow, they really picked a name that rolls off the tongue. Grimlick's stocks creatures of all sizes, from magical cockroaches, enchanted boa constrictors, all the way through to medium-sized cats and trick bears. All of these familiars are perfectly suited for enhancing the image of... Honestly, familiars are so last century. I've been using the Scrybone 8 Plus for a year now, and I'm very happy with it. What? Oh, go to Grimlick's Animal Avatars and Familiars if you want a ridiculous and glorified pet.
All the tabletop role-playing news. We aim to amuse and we aim to enthuse. And Morris's unofficial tabletop RPG.
Hello, 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 and welcome to Morris's unofficial tabletop RPG talk. I am Russ, aka Morris, or Morris, aka Russ, and with me this week is...
PJ Coffey from the Southampton Guild of Roleplayers. Russ, as ever, it is a delight to be. And joining us also, we have the extremely hard-working lady who helps run Ian Bumpling with an iron fist. Some say that if you cut straight through her, you'd find the words Ian Publishing written all the way through. I don't know about that, but I do know that the values she holds on the inside are made manifest on the outside. It's the one! It's the only! It's
me, Jessica from EM Publishing. That was quite the intro to pull off the facts. I'm wearing an EM Publishing t-shirt today. I'm wearing one of the uniforms.
Your weirdest intro, I think. So
yeah.
New personal best achieved. Good times.
The only way is up.
Compared Jess to a stick of Brighton Rock.
Well, there's worse things to be compared to. At least there's
clean. I suppose so. I suppose so.
Solid, dependable, very sweet. What more do you want, Russ?
We have got so much news to do. I think we should get cracking, get moving with the news.
No, I think we should waffle about for a bit and lose track of the point, as is the brand for the podcast.
That is what we usually do. I agree.
All right.
I was thinking of trying this thing called efficiency never tried before.
Okay, fine. Should we start with talking about the news from Dungeons & Dragons?
There's
from
so much of it.
The Magicians by the Beach.
There is so much of it. There's a lot of D&D news. We've got some corporate D&D news, and we've got some Vecna D&D news.
Let's start with the exciting corporate news, because everyone enjoys corporate news.
Oh,
Druids of the Dockyard.
It is the best type of news.
Yes, it is. I love it.
Do you want to do it, Jess? You do the corporate news, and then I'll do the Vecna news. How about that?
Yeah. Okay, that sounds fair, because I think you know more about the Vecna news than I do. As long as I can do the Baldur's Gate element of it, I'll be fine. But yes, so the corporate news. So Cynthia Williams has been president of Wizards of the Coast for the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
She is going to be leaving the company at the end of the month, which is quite quick.
Mm-hmm.
And Hasbro is already looking for someone else to step into the role. So I think her leaving is effective like 26th of April. So that's very soon. I think we found out it was like 15th of April it was made public via...
Yeah, that doesn't necessarily mean that's when the decision was made.
No,
that's just
not at
when,
all. When we found out about it. But yeah, so there's a quote from Wizards of the Coast about it that Rascal News published, and Wizards of the Coast have said, "We're excited for Cynthia to take the next steps in her career and grateful for the contributions she has made in her more than 2 years at Wizards and Hasbro. We wish her the absolute best on her next endeavour. We have started the search for our next president of Wizards of the Coast and hope to have a successor in place soon."
So yeah, so she came from Microsoft.
Yes.
And she was heavily involved in Xbox gaming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the gaming ecosystem commercial team, I believe, was the team she was on.
Yes.
Over at Microsoft. And I was wondering, so she's been there for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And presumably she's put
you know, her stamp on wizards in that time, mm-hmm. as a leader of the of those wizards out there, those magicians out there on the beach.
Yeah.
So, what do you think? Like, given that context, that she came from Microsoft, was, you know, big on the sort of like Xbox gaming that side of things. What would you say her sort of legacy, her stamp, was the stamp that she put on wizards over the last 2 years?
Well, I don't know if it can purely be attributed to her, because I know generally Wizards of the Coast has made wanting to make a move to digital. That's mm-hmm. They publicly stated that. And so that makes sense why, because it was Chris Cox was originally doing the role and then stepped up to be Hasbro CEO.
Yeah.
So I imagine they were looking for somebody that had good understanding of digital gaming and wanted to
carry that on.
Yeah. So I think that's why she was chosen and is in the role.
Mm-hmm.
Her only staying for 2 years, can only speculate as to why. It's difficult to know. It seems strange we haven't known for a long time, because normally...
Should we necessarily know, though? I mean, as long as the people who need to know, do we need to know?
I mean...
I don't know.
I suppose shareholders need to know.
Yeah, for a publicly trading company, the change of a CEO is significant, so normally I would expect... Because I imagine she has quite a long bit of gardening leave or, you know, resignation period notice. I'd imagine, being a role, you know, because, like, goodness, my role's like 2 or 3 months notice anyway, and I'm not a president of Wizards of the Coast. So I imagine hers is the same. So for us to know only a few weeks is, maybe that's a PR decision they made. But also, it could be something to do in her personal life. It could just be that she...
It could be anything. She might have been headhunted and got a better job. Who knows? There's literally no way to know.
Skipping jobs every two... Changing jobs every 2 years is pretty much even recommended. Mm. Like, if you stay at the same place for years and years at a time, sure, you get to show your company loyalty, but, you know, that and... $5 will get you a cup of coffee at Starbucks, you know?
Yeah.
So
I'm not going to speculate as to why she's leaving, but I guess her legacy is linked with the digitalization side of it. Luckily, there's been no microtransactions currently put into D&D Beyond. Yeah. That was I remember two years ago when we were talking about Microsoft, because there were some other people that joined senior leadership from Microsoft as well.
Xbox people, if I recall.
That's the one. And I think there was a fear that there'd be loads of microtransactions for things and...
Not yet.
Yeah, but that hasn't come to fruition during her time.
Well, who knows? Maybe she's just like, you know what, I don't really have a say in what's going on. CEO of Wizards of the Coast sounds amazing.
Yeah.
And then you're like looking at this latest round of layoffs from Hasbro and you're like, oh, okay. It's a subsidiary that's wholly owned. Like, they don't get a say in who gets hired and who gets fired.
Who knows?
If I was tasked with trying to get some books out and they hired all the people who made good books and they fired the team that made the most successful computer game of last year, I'd be like, could we not do that? And then someone tells me no. I'm like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, but, you know, we're kind of imagining conversations that we don't know happened.
This is pure speculation.
I've got no inside information.
Yeah.
People said, oh, you've got inside information. I'm like, I do report some news every week. It does give me some information, but none of it's inside. It's all
We have the outside scoop here.
We have the outside scoop. We can see which direction things are moving. It's like a wild superpower.
But yeah.
So April 25th is next week, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as of next week, they are CEO-less, or presidentless, sorry. So presumably they're going to have to get someone in pretty quickly.
Oh, you should throw your hat into the ring, Russ.
No, you do it.
No, thank you.
I know, I think getting a role like that in place takes a very long time, because, maybe they'll do it internally. Maybe they'll promote internally.
Maybe.
That's always a nice thing to do.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Who knows? But anyway, big change at the top at Wizards of the Coast.
Yeah, we'll let you know when somebody publicly accepts the role.
Hmm. Okay, let's move on.
That's the corporate news. There you go.
Yes, that's the corporate news.
Tell us about the fun news.
There is more D&D news, so we've got some Vecna news and we've got some Baldur's Gate news. Do you want to do the Baldur's Gate news first?
Yes, sure. Well, it's kind of linked to... Well, there's two bits of Baldur's Gate news. I'll start with the first bit and the second one will segue nicely into what you're going to talk about. So, as we know, and PJ alluded to just moments ago. So last month, Baldur's Gate 3 developers Larian Studios revealed that they are elated not to be working on further D&D video games, expansions, mm-hmm. or DLC. So they will not be doing a Baldur's Gate 4, which made people, mm-hmm. including myself, very sad. Because I really mm-hmm. liked it and I would like more of the delicious things I enjoyed, thank you. Mm-hmm. But I accepted the reasons why and yeah, fair enough. However, Wizards of the Coast have said that a sequel, so Baldur's Gate 4, is still very much on the cards and that they're seeking another partner for the project. So they're keen to do Baldur's Gate 4. It won't be Larian Studios doing it, but I think they're currently in the process of looking around for who would be a good partner for that. So this will be years away because obviously they're not even announcing a partner. So creating a game of this scale, and I assume they'll need to keep the same scale. You know,
it took them best parcel for three and a half years.
So it'll take years and years for that to happen. So it won't be imminent. So by then, I might have done all the playthroughs that I want to. I finished my Dark Urge run through and I did the evil choices. No spoilers in this, but I don't feel good about the choices, especially at the end, because everyone got mad at me. And were like, why are you doing this? And I just were like, that's a really fair question. It's not a good choice. But I wanted to try.
Just doing it because the choice was there and I hadn't done that.
Yeah, I hadn't done it and I wanted the achievement. So I have a lot of big feelings about that second playthrough on tactician mode, but there we go. But yeah, anyway, so Baldur's Gate 4. By the time it comes out, I may be done with Baldur's Gate 3. Who knows?
Maybe.
But also, Wizards of the Coast have released... Russ can talk about Vecna a bit now. But in kind of tangential Baldur's Gate 3 news, the voice actor who played Astarion, the elf vampire Baldur's Gate 3, Neil Newbin, the voice actor, is also voice acting for Vecna in the trailer for the adventure. Very different voice. It's not Astarion's voice. That would be super weird. But so that was just nice that they reused him for that. And very different voice. Very cool. But that's the same actor doing it. So that's nice keeping it in the family.
It's not a long trailer. It's like, half a minute long. Yeah. And it's just kind of like a camera panning over Vecna.
It's like, it's like a cinematic teaser sort of thing.
Yeah, and him saying something. And he goes... What if you could have your heart's deepest desire? But he says it in a more creepy, Vecna-y way. But I'm not a voice actor. Divine power to transform your life. Or am I a voice actor? I might actually naturally have a very strong Scottish accent and you never knew. The divine power to transform your life for the right price. An eye for an eye. Flesh for a crown. Wretched mortality for glorious eternity. Rise with me, for who can stop a god? Is what the trailer says.
Intriguing.
I can stop a god. I've done it several times in Baldur's Gate. But...
No,
that's a dog. It's a dog.
I would never kill a dog. I've done an evil playthrough, but I did not hurt the dog. No. Anyway. No. Yeah. Tell us more about Vecna, though, beyond the teaser trailer. Because you have more.
I just want to say, those characters in Baldur's Gate as well.
Yeah.
Like Astarion and the... other ones that I all know all the names of, but I'm choosing not to say
the
names.
And the other ones.
Will, Gale, Carlack.
Shadowheart. Laisel. I always forget about Shadowheart.
Yeah. She's so irrelevant to everything. Get out.
Yeah, so Will. Wizards of the Coast have confirmed that they own those characters. So if there's a Baldur's Gate 4, it is possible, maybe, I guess, that...
They won't be made by Larian. So, yeah.
No, it won't be made by Larian, but the characters are owned by Wizards.
The characters
so
may
they
still show up in Baldur's Gate 4, perhaps, because they're now canon D&D IP, basically. They exist in the world.
It'd be hard to do as a follow-up, because the characters, depending on your choices in the game, can end up in very different places and be very different characters by the end of the adventure.
I don't know.
So that's
maybe
interesting
a Mass
how
Effect
you would do that.
2-style thing, where it's like you make a bunch of... You like get given the thing and they say, oh, choose these things that you chose in the previous adventure. I'll be like, I have no recollection of these events.
I think Mass Effect also, you could port, if you had it on the same system, you could port it over as well. So it did it for you. That was a while ago.
That was all made by BioWare, so same system.
Yeah. So easy to... Anyway.
Okay. Anyway,
Let's talk about Vecna.
Vecna. So there's two things about Vecna. The first is, you know, the pre-order adventure, Nest of the Eldritch Eye. So you can only get that if you pre-ordered Vecna Eve of Ruin from D&D Beyond.
Yeah. And
it's the only way to get it.
It's due to come out the end of May.
Well, Nest of the Elder Tri is out now.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Eve of Ruin is End of May, yeah. Yeah,
okay.
So the people who did pre-order it, I didn't, but people who did pre-order it now have Nest of the Elder Tri, or Next of the Elder Tri, as I just realized I wrote on this article.
Typo.
Unfortunate typo, yes.
That's also
Nest of the Nest of the Elder Tri, yeah. So basically, so people have sort of talked about it a little bit. So basically, it's a little dungeon crawl, third level characters set in Neverwinter's sewers.
Lovely.
It's mainly used to sort of seed, like, the concept of Vecna into your campaign at third level.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, long before you actually play Eve of Ruin at 10th level, much later. So it's kind of like you seed it in early.
Yeah.
And then you call back to it later when you start that campaign at 10th level.
Yeah.
I don't know, a massive more. You know, there's not much else to say about it. It's a 15-area dungeon in the sewers. You know, it's a sort of like one-shot adventure.
Nice.
And it just kind of introduces the concept of Vecna to people who maybe... I think what I'm hearing is if you don't know who Vecna is, maybe it's worth doing. If you... If your players are familiar with Vecna anyway, it may not necessarily add much to...
But it might be nice to seed it in your campaign early, like you say, at level 3, just as a flag that, hey, folks, in the future, we're going to be doing Vecna, Eve of Ruin, which will be a long time away, because if your players are at level 3 and you're at level 10 and you're playing once a month, it'll be a while.
It could take a while, yeah.
It's a
bit of a paradox. The people who are most likely to pre-order this adventure are the people who most likely already know who Vecna is.
Hmm.
If you don't know who it is, then why would you pre-order an adventure, especially about it? It's like,
I guess you could also, though, run it as a prologue.
Mm-hmm.
So make your characters at level 3 and level 10, run their prologue at level 3, and then jump forward to level 10.
You're bound by your creativity.
High achieve, really, isn't it?
Onwards with Vecna. Vecna has monsters in it.
It does.
Not in Vecna, in the adventure. Doesn't have monsters in himself.
We don't know that. Pretty cool. Spoilers.
Like, you go to, like, some sort of primal necromantic plane, and it turns out that they're just Vecna's, like, super body floating in space.
It's like that, it's like that film Inner Space with Dennis Quaid from the 80s.
He
goes into a tiny little molecule-sized submarine and, like, goes around somebody's body.
I was thinking more like a Russian doll situation.
Yeah, are you not thinking... Just I mean, I go with Fantastic Voyage... myself. Oh, right, Russian Doll, not the amazing series with the lady from Orange is the New Black.
Natasha. Correct. Somebody.
Natasha Lyons.
That series is very good, though, yes.
Yeah. But anyway, Vecna Monsters.
I was wondering why you were mentioning it. It was so confusing.
Yeah, no, I meant literally the nesting dolls.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's more than one monster in Vecna Eve of Ruin Adventure, you say, Russ?
Only one.
40 new monsters.
40?
Wow. So, each of the chapter... You know, we already know that each chapter, like, visits a different game world.
Yeah, we talked about it before. Like,
one's Dragonlance, one's Ravenloft, and one's Eberron sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So each of the chapter has its own theme and its own set of monsters that fit that theme.
Nice.
And there's 40 monsters in total. Some of them are brand new, some of them are updated from earlier editions.
Mm-hmm.
So some of them we've got like a demon lord, Miska the Wolf Spider. It's like a champion of chaos with, like, wolf-like spider demonic minions.
Lovely.
Okay.
And we got some relentless stalker horror movie style monsters that you can't get away from, which sounds kind of fun. He says there's quite a lot of them are quite inventive and quite disturbing.
Just genre mashed two terrifying things to...
Yeah, there's like spider dragons, like spiders and dragons, like mashed together to be extra icky.
Wonderful. We love that.
Yeah. I don't know if I like the idea of a spider dragon.
Spider dragon.
Does whatever a spider dragon can.
Yeah. Makes it seem less scary there. I thought that might help your nightmares. Yeah. Just
thank you.
You're
thank
welcome.
You so much. Tomb of Annihilation had a stone juggernaut in it, and there's a granite juggernaut in this, which is an upgrade.
A granite. That's great.
A granite juggernaut. And then you've got stat blocks for classic characters like Illustrious Silverhand and Tasha. You're making a face.
Yeah, Peter. Because granite is a form of stone. So you've got stone.
That's why I laughed. As pictured, they hide in kitchens on surfaces, pretending to be, you know.
Yeah.
And then suddenly,
It's like saying you got a metal juggernaut, and then there's a gold juggernaut, or a silver juggernaut has an example of it. And it's like, but...
Does this bother you?
It's
PJ's bothered now. This is. Do you want to? I'll tell you what.
The etymology disturbed me.
Yeah, do you want to sit and worry about that for a bit? We'll let Russ carry on with the rest of it.
I would say I'm worried about it. I'm more just.
Sorry, worried was the wrong term, but have your feelings about it. There we go.
I'm just shaking my head in. Yeah. In disappointment, yeah. To be honest.
Okay. But anyway, all right. I'm sorry. But there's
please
granite.
Please continue with your listing of the crimes against etymology that have been committed.
Okay, so we've got stat blocks for, like, Illustrious Silverhand and Tasha. The Tasha stat block is like a younger version of Tasha. Like, I think she was in, was it Wild Beyond the Witchlight? Did she show up in that, I think?
Pass.
Sounds plausible.
And she has, like, prototype versions of the spells that are in Tasha's Cauldron of Everything.
Oh, yeah. I vaguely remember us talking about this, but it was. I haven't played it, so I don't have.
That no, I haven't either.
It's okay. Quite a clever idea, actually, having like less advanced forms of spells.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, I mean, we thought we were very big and clever, advanced fifth edition, throwing in some advanced spells. Like, no. How about spells that are strictly worse? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I guess they're the ones that she uses. It doesn't mean that your player characters have to use them and choose them.
Yeah,
I guess.
They're like Easter eggs, maybe, in her stat block sort of thing.
Yeah.
She can use worse versions of existing spells.
Mm.
Why not?
Why not?
That's quite interesting, actually. I think, you know, there's design space there. Anyway, I'm sorry.
Also, there's a new version of Strahd, which is kind of tied in some way to the Death House. And Death House was that little prequel adventure that came with Curse of Strahd.
Complete meat grinder adventure.
I liked Death House, it was good.
Yeah, I've never played it, but like every time I see it online, people are like, oh, this will totally kill the players. You should run it.
Is the goal to kill the players? Is that the goal?
Like, I don't think that's a stated design goal, but it's a frequently observed unintended side effect.
It's not, I mean, my players didn't die.
It's not my goal when I'm on a game. Soft. In fact, I worry about them all dying, and then the session ends, and I'm like, isn't that fun?
depends what you're going for. Like, if you're running 10 candles, brilliant. If you're trying to run a prequel adventure to a module and then die, it's like, oops,
exactly.
Too high.
Context.
Anyway, the monsters, we've also got lots of pictures of monsters because there's a video that you can watch about these monsters, and there's lots of pictures of monsters, and there's an article on EN World, and the link will be in the show notes, so you can pop over and see those pretty pictures of some of the, like, ooh, and that must be the spider dragon.
Yeah.
That is quite ugly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do not like.
And there's
do not like the spider.
And
dragon.
There's a full video with the game designers Rob Lundin
talking
and Mackenzie Darmus.
Yeah.
And that's linked on the EM World article as well. So if you want to,
if
dive in deep, if you want to have a look, if it's for you.
Yeah.
That there's a high level adventure path though, level 10 and above.
Yeah, it's good.
That's good. So I hope people like it. But yeah.
So you know, Beadle and Grimm do those deluxe versions of the adventures.
Yes.
So we now know what's going to be in the Vecna Eve of Ruin 1.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. So it's coming this summer. Yes. You can pre-order it now. It's coming this summer. It's about $500. It's not cheap.
Well, I suppose it's a collector's item.
But they do like really high quality stuff, isn't it? It's
you get a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah.
You get a lot of stuff. So this is what you get.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So you get the full Vecna Eve of Ruin adventure broken out into 5 booklets.
Oh, okay.
Oh, nice.
A D&D Beyond code for the full digital version of it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, strong. Providing a bit of PDF support for their work. Got to love it.
Three bonus encounters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
48 half-page art pieces pulled out from the book to share with your players.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh, yeah, that is nice.
Little prop. There you go. As opposed to having to, like, whoosh the book up with your hand over, like, half the paragraphs.
Oh, yeah.
Hide the stat block. Hide the stat block. See the monster. Hide the stat block.
Yeah. And then you get 18 miniatures.
Nice.
And these include things like Vecna, a Vrock, and Illustrial, and Tasha, and a bearded devil, and a Dryder. So a few wizards. Basically, a few wizards, devils, and a couple of, and two or three named characters.
I mean,
Vecna being one of them.
If I wanted the Keeper of Secrets, I'd look at a Vrock and be like, yeah, nice. Mm.
Yeah, so this is interesting. So there's the magic item cards,
mm-hmm.
and they are aluminium plated or aluminum plated, as they've said, aluminium plated, and you can combine them to create a 34-inch rod of 7 parts.
Sorry, Okay, so you take these cards and you string them together in a fashion.
Mm.
And then you have created the rod of seven parts.
Yes.
Ah, how delightful.
Yes, because yeah. They were like, I assume there's seven of them. One, two, three, four. Yeah, seven of them.
It would be so weird if there were six. The rod of seven parts right. Over six pieces.
Yeah. So I guess basically every time you pick up, because the quest is basically, as far as we can make out, about getting the seven parts of the rod from different D&D worlds.
So did you say there were cards?
Yes.
Oh, I would have thought it would have been like a plastic mini or something that you could actually physically clip together. Obviously scaled down, you're not going to have an actual...
I suspect they have things written on them, so maybe you get access to different powers as you go.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. Well, each one's a different magic item, and then they combine together in some manner.
So. All right, I'll allow it then.
Like a giant transformer mecha thing.
Yeah. I can only remember the Dinobots.
Yeah, Grimlock. Yeah.
Oh, Constructicons. There you go. Yeah. For reference, it's Grimlock, Slag.
Oh, you do know them, okay.
And Sludge.
Okay, fair enough. Okay.
Get out of here, Russ.
I have a Grimlock somewhere. I have a Grimlock.
Yeah. There's a joke to be made there that I will refrain from.
Like things I've learned in primary school that have stayed with me.
Anyway,
moving on.
Also in this box is 16 battle maps, gridded for minis, a poster map of the Sanctum, 4 area maps to give to players, and 8 annotated dungeon maps for the DM, 10 in-world handouts to immerse your players in the world of the adventure, a custom DM screen with art by Siddharth Chaturved.
I do like a nice DM screen. Does it have rules, references, and things on the back?
I've only got the front of it's gorgeous. Okay. I don't know what's on the back.
I love GM screens with like stuff on the back that
gonna be the basic GM screen, so
probably not.
But yeah, just a bit like
Yeah, it might have some adventure specific stuff on there as well.
It's quite hard to find space.
I just rely on the level up GM screen so much when I'm running because there's so many new different rules in it that I know how it works, but I can't remember if it's like what number dice it is or what number it is. But it's just there on a grid, and it's
just make the players look it up. That's the best way.
I'm too anxious to do that, PJ.
So anyway, also in this box, there are 4 coins, collectible coins.
Ooh, shiny.
There is
numismatic.
A temporary tattoo.
That's very cool. I'm glad it's temporary.
That you can put on the back of your hand.
Yeah.
I'm glad it's temporary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't think you can put an actual tattoo in a box.
Could give you a tattoo gun and the design.
Tattoo gun template. Bish bosh, let's go.
Off you go, yeah.
Yeah.
I bet some people have that really tattooed, though. I bet there are people.
Maybe.
Probably.
I have not.
I don't either. I don't have any tattoos. I'll get the EM Publishing logo tattooed on me.
I have tattoos.
I know. Scandalous.
Multiple tattoos.
Well, gosh.
What else was there? Oh, yes. And 43 encounter cards and 11 oversized encounter cards for the epic NPCs.
And a partridge in a pear tree.
Yeah. And that is what's in that box. That's... And the box itself is like faux leather, foil stamped, foam lined. It's really nice.
That's very cool. In fairness, if I was planning to run this campaign for my friends over a long period of time, that does sound very...
It is $500, though. Just to be clear,
I'm not, so I will not. But you get a lot for it. It is $500, and $500 is $500. It's a lot of money.
Mm.
But if you have disposable income and you're running it, that could be a really fun thing. And based on all the contents you've described, I see why it costs that much. I'm not like, oh, this is just a rip-off. It's like, there's a lot of stuff in there.
You get a lot of stuff for your $500.
I'm not
saying it's
money.
Not worth $500. I'm just saying $500 is a lot of money. Yeah.
How many of us have $500 these days?
Yeah.
No, that does sound really cool. I'm not running this campaign, so I won't be splurging on that. But if I was, I might be saving up my pennies for it.
Yeah.
Well, I've got a couple of small bits, maybe. Pilgrim Press has announced a date for the official Kickstarter start date of 13th Age 2nd Edition.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, okay, when is it?
7th of May.
Oh, that's very soon. Is the pre-launch page up for the crowdfunding platform?
I don't think the pre-launch page is up just yet, but I thought I'd draw it to people's attention because I suspect it's going to be a big one.
Well, this has been on the most anticipated TTRPG of the year list for several years now.
I am anticipating it.
Yeah. I've been through the page, and it seems like they've got a very methodical, sensible approach to what they're going to sort out. They're going to be redoing like certain talents. We're looking at you, Bard, especially, in order to make them more fun to play. They're going to be redoing the advice for things like the 13 major, they're not divinities, 13 icons.
Icons.
Mm. Yes, yes. They're redoing the advice for the icons, so it will make a lick of sense, which, yeah.
Mm.
I mean, basically, I read it, didn't make any sense, and then someone said, oh, yeah, it's just like, some bit's good, some bit's bad, and you're like, yeah, go on.
There's been... And you just... So sorry.
Yeah, and you just use it to improvise. It's a very good low improv game. Or low effort to improv game, which I really like. So
For those who aren't familiar with it, basically it's kind of a spin off of D&D with kind of like a mix of fourth edition and third edition sensibilities, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. It's like the fourth edition. Two of the people, like Jonathan Tweet and Rob Pazzo from fourth edition, were told by Pelgrane, "Hey, write Dungeons and Dragons, but the way you want to do it." And they're like, "Okay," and then they did a lot of stuff. Key feature system, probably things like escalation dice, which adds a +1 each round that you keep escalating, which does mean that the 3-round fight is very nicely timed and makes sense. You've got everything's to hit rolls, there's no saving throws, just varying defenses like AC, physical defense, and mental defense. And also for monsters, depending upon the dice number you roll, they will do a different sort of attack. Pretty interesting.
I had one of the designers on it on Not D&D last year to talk about it, because there's been loads of... Because it's technically Not D&D, and I know it's a spin-off of it, but I was like, it counts enough and people are interested. So we talked about 13th Age, and there's been loads of playtesting and loads of work done on this for a long time. So if you check out the Not D&D podcast, if you want to hear about where it was last year. But that's good. That's a nice bit of news. Thanks, PJ.
Yeah, excellent.
Did you say you had another piece there?
Oh.
More?
Yeah, I know, I've just been like, you know, hanging around, getting up to no good, being on the internet and so forth.
Unbelievable.
I know, it's like going into the ground, such as it was. So, terrible news for Star Trek fans, the Lower Decks has been cancelled.
Yes.
There is a hashtag...
Yes, that is terrible news. You can see how incredibly sad I am that a cartoon has been cancelled.
PJ specifically said for fans.
Yes,
I am a Star Trek fan. How am I not a Star Trek fan?
Because you don't watch Lower Decks. Lower Decks. So. Sorry, you served that on a plate. That was too easy. All right, PJ, back to you. What's the news?
The hashtag 17 seasons and a moopsie.
It's trending.
People are trying to... Yeah, it's trending. People are pushing out there. You should push out there as well, because they'd quite like Lower Decks to come back.
Is there an RPG connection to this? Or is this just a news about a...
I don't know. How is Star Trek connected to RPGs?
Well, earlier this year, Modiphius announced a new edition of Star Trek Adventures TTRPG.
That is a thing that they did.
So I can link it with that.
Yeah.
All right. Maybe turning it into an RPG topic, because you did mention Star Trek Adventures 2nd Edition, which is coming up at Gen Con in August. There is an article up where Nathan Dowdle, who's the system developer, unveiled a few more details.
Oh, that's more.
So you can read it in more detail over on Modiphius' site, but basically what they've done is they've cleaned up the rules presentation overall. They provide guidance on the use of traits. Gotten rid of challenge dice.
What are your opinions on that? Because I haven't played the system a lot, but I know
I played the system. It. Which one of the challenge dice, Peter?
Are they
the? Because we've been playing it for a while, and I'm sure I'm just being.
I don't think I've seen the challenge dice in play.
No, I must be just missing something obvious.
I'm also baffled.
Is this a niche rule that people didn't use, and that's why they're removing it? Because that's what it sounds like.
Maybe I don't know. We're not running it. We're just like. Turning up and playing, it's the best.
Okay.
I don't have to know anything. What I have to do is like occasionally I roll some dice and try and blag criticals.
That's me playing every game ever. Yeah.
The challenge dice.
I don't know the rules. I'm just here.
Just some vibes and roleplay. Yeah.
I don't get invited to tables because I know the rules.
Challenge dice are the ones that aren't I think they're the ones that aren't the D20s.
The D6s. The D6. Because the D6s have like explosions. And which are like successes, and they've got like Star Trek.
Star Trek Adventures Challenge dice set. Let me actually look at them. I'll know for sure.
Yes,
please.
Right, if I look at them with my very eyes, yep, it's the D6s.
Right.
Okay, that's what the challenge dice are. It's the D6s.
They're getting rid of the challenge dice.
Yeah.
They're getting rid of them.
What are your thoughts on that as players of the game?
That's it. Well, I don't know what they're going to do then, because basically they're used. So you roll like the 2d20 to determine whether or not you do something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then the challenge dice are kind of used to roll damage, kind of really generally, aren't they?
Yeah. Number of successes, and occasionally you get the. Isn't there like. There's a Star Trek symbol as one face.
There's a Star Trek symbol on them, yeah. And there's a little explosion symbol.
Is there like a Doom symbol as well?
I can't remember.
Interesting.
Yeah. Like, yeah, we roll these dice a lot because they're pretty keen doing anything. So I guess just going to replace them with standard D6s, maybe? Question mark.
Or change the damage system entirely and key it straight off the D20 rolls in some way. I don't know.
I mean, that would be good in many respects.
I wonder if the article itself, because I was just looking at my own bullet-pointed thing. No challenge dice. The game now only uses 20-sided dice. No more challenge dice. Damage in combat has been revised to account for this change, as have extended tasks.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds good. So extended tasks, like, I think maybe we've done stuff like we'd roll to succeed, and we'd roll a number of challenge dice, the number of dots we got would increase our success totals.
Okay.
Mm.
And to be fair, the combat system, it had things you could do with effects, but it was just kind of clunky, and you had to sort of work out what you could do after you rolled, because that's really in time you could work it out. You couldn't really declare what you were doing as part of your action. So it sounds like maybe you'll be able to declare this as part of your action. That might change the target number you're trying to hit.
Who knows?
Yeah, we don't know. We'll have to wait and see. But yeah, I mean, it sounds like a simplification. I think that's really a strength, to be honest. Simplify your game a bit further in that sort of respect.
They've got more character options in the core book. There's 14 character species in total.
Oh, very nice.
So that'll include Cardassians, Ferengi, Klingons, Orions, and Romulans.
Wow, they're bringing Cardassians. Don't know how we'll keep up.
And then we've got life path options for enlisted crew, intelligence operatives, diplomats, and civilian backgrounds.
Interesting. They do have a fair few civilians in Star Trek, so that'd be quite nice to see.
Yeah, they're updating the advancement and reputation rules. I don't think we've ever advanced in our game, have we?
Sounds about right.
I'm not sure we've ever really felt the need, really.
No, fair enough.
It's like, we're junior officers, we're quite happy.
Yeah.
Happy hanging out in the lower decks.
And then we have revised starship mechanics as well.
Ooh, intrigued to see those, because we've been looking at those a lot with Void Runner, so...
Yeah. I think the Star Trek mechanics...
We haven't used them, have we?
We use them a bit, because like, they give you like an extra dice you roll with a different number, but if we didn't have Star Trek mechanics at all and we're just blagging it, I don't know if we would know what the difference was between Lee blagging stuff based on a starship-shaped bit of paper with stuff written on, and he's like, oh yeah, you totally do this, and what the actual rules are. I don't know that we would be able to tell the difference. They're not intrusive, but I don't feel they're particularly effectual.
Hence why they're revising them in the second edition.
Yeah. I don't know how a Starship combat works in it, because we haven't done that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, I think I was in an early playtest. Mm. And the question, so if we're travelling at light speed and people are chasing us, and we throw out, I don't know, a couple of buckets of sand out the back of the ship, would that be bad for them? Yes.
Sand. It's like, yeah. That's just...
So you get hit by a bucket of sand at light speed, you can't be sad.
I mean, if someone hits me with a bucket of sand when I'm sat stationary, I'd be sad. So yeah. If someone just came in right now and threw a bucket of sand at me, I'm not happy.
Less radiation from the explosion.
Yeah, less radiation. Less explosion. But equally, the sand everywhere in my office, and I've got a carpet.
Unless it was radioactive sand, in which case.
Anyway.
Throwing radioactive sand at Jessica seems mean, Russ. You shouldn't do that.
Yeah. How dare you?
All right, I won't do that. I won't throw radioactive sand at Jessica then.
Thank you for the bare
minimum. I was going to, but you've talked me out of it.
I'm available for, just so listeners know, I'm available to help facilitate and resolve any employee was
for mediation.
I'm happy to mediate for you.
Good to know.
Especially those that involve radioactive sand.
Mm. Oh, yeah, that's like a niche specialty.
Yeah. It's been 7 weeks since we defeated the Dragon King of the Grey Wastes. You know what? It's time for a new adventure.
Verily. We've been hired by the Duchess to explore the ancient tomb of the Elven Kings.
It's said they are haunted by the cursed remains of the early tyrants.
And trapped with deadly devices so cunning they'd make a fox envious. I hope you've both been preparing during your recent downtime.
Oh, of course. I've been training. Putting all my newfound experience to use and levelling up, so to speak.
Oh, me too. In fact, I've learned a new spell. I'm fully prepared for those elfish ghouls.
Good, good, good. I myself have practiced some new combat manoeuvres.
And I've gained an even greater proficiency in the picking of locks. So what you, wizard? Tell us of this new spell.
Oh, indeed. It was a hard choice, selecting the best spell from the archives of Grand Sorcery. But in the end, there's really only one right option.
Oh, something to help us navigate the ancient labyrinth and protect us from the Eldritch Curse.
Oh, to defeat the dire spirits which will assail us and guide us when the shadows draw close.
Yeah, kind of.
Oh, so what is it, my wizardly friend?
Yeah, what's the name of the spell?
So, I looked through the Grand Archives, which contain countless spells from across the ages, meticulously scribed and safely stored by the sages of old.
Oh, yes, of course, of course.
And, consider the nature of our next quest. The ancient tomb, the lingering spirits, the devious traps, the unknown dangers.
Naturally.
And carefully weighed my options before making my decision.
Which was?
Well, my friends, I have chosen the spell.
Yes?
Detect cabbage.
What?
Did you just say detect cabbage?
Yes, yes I did. This spell was created by the Archmage Sylvanestra the Green, back in the Twilight Age.
And it enables you to...
detect cabbages, yes.
Sorry. Can we just, you know, rewind a little bit? So I just think my hearing's a little off. So I keep thinking I'm hearing you say, detect cabbage.
Yes, yes, that's it, exactly. I now have the ability to...
detect cabbages, yes.
But what... why?
Well, I figured we might need a cabbage.
Why would we need a cabbage?
Oh, you never know when you might need a cabbage, my friend.
We are exploring the ancient tomb of the Elven Tyrants.
We'll be facing evil spirits and lethal traps.
Yes, and we can rest assured that no cabbage will go undetected.
Okay, look, mate, we're not doubting the efficacy of cabbage detection.
No, I am confident that in a cabbage-based crisis, we can rely upon you to locate any lethal vegetables necessary.
Okay, it's just more that, you know, we don't feel...
Okay, you don't feel what? Come on, out with it!
Well, we don't feel like the detection of cabbages is necessarily
a priority.
What do you mean? Not a priority.
Well, I mean, like, given the dangerous situation in which we expect to find ourselves, it's hard to imagine
a valid use case, as it were.
What if we want some cabbage soup?
I don't even like cabbage soup.
Well, you know, I'm sure our magical friend here can, you know, rustle up some broccoli or a sprout or two if necessary.
Oh, no, just cabbages. The spell is really quite specific, see?
Right. No. We're going to be deep inside one of the most perilous locations in the Nine Duchies.
Oh, yes, yes.
So we'll be best by wights and spectres who seek to drain our very life force.
Oh, indeed, indeed.
Navigating ancient traps, which will slice us to ribbons or burn us to a crisp in an instant.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so what have you spent the last 3 months learning how to detect blinking cabbages for?
Well, I'm grateful.
It's not a matter of gratitude, mate. It's a question of utility.
You could have learnt spells which would, you know, ward off the wicked curses which plague the tomb.
Or which penetrate the deepest shadows and light our way when all seems lost.
Here, look. Do I tell you what combat manoeuvres to train in? Or which set of lockpicks to use?
Well, no. But, you know...
So show me the courtesy of not complaining about the spells I choose to learn.
Hey, if I had spent the last 6 weeks practicing the latest cabbage slaying techniques, I'd want you to say something.
Yeah. And if I had been mastering the art of unlocking cabbages...
So what I'm hearing is that once I'd done my job and successfully detected the cabbages, we're in no position to deal with them. Is that right?
Deal with them?
I mean, I've done my part. I don't think it's too much of me to ask for you to do yours.
So our part in the discovery, defeat, and unlocking of any rogue cabbages which we might seek to do us harm.
Oh, fine. Mock me, or you like. You mark my words. When we're at our darkest hour, in our most dire need of leafy vegetables, you'll be glad I learned this spell.
I can't believe I'm even having this conversation.
Yeah, me neither. You know, look, Wizzy McWizard, or, you know, whatever your name is.
My name is Jerry, as you well know.
Well, Jerry, we don't think this is going to work out.
Not work out? What do you mean?
We mean we're going to find a new wizard.
Right. Is this because of that cabbage tree?
You think?
So, after 9 years of adventuring together, you're done for me because of a cabbage?
Look, we can't go into danger armed with nothing but a battle cabbage.
Sorry, my friend.
Wait. Okay, look. Let's forget the cabbage thing.
It's hard to forget the cabbage thing.
It's the kind of thing that sticks in your mind.
Hear me out. I did learn another spell as well.
Oh, well, why didn't you say so?
Yeah, talk about burying the lead.
Very well, my friend. Tell us about this other spell.
Oh, yeah. You didn't think I had been so foolish as to rely on a single fresh one, do you? No, my friends. I also prepared the incantation known as...
Get it over with.
Paradise Parsnip.
You're fired. Let's go.
Okay.
Wait, I have more. Bewitch beetroot. What that enchant eggplant? Turnip tempest. Oh, don't go. Ripples radish. Pepper panic. Carrot conflagration. Asparagus ascension. No, celery shield.
You know, I am feeling quite hungry. Fancy a parsnip?
Malak the Maleficent here. If, like me, you're enjoying this podcast, please consider subscribing on Patreon for exclusive bonus content every week and the warm, fuzzy feeling of knowing you are helping to keep the show going. Subscribe at patreon.com/Morris. There, I said it. Can you stop staring at me like that now? The things I do. All right. Don't forget... Patreon.com/Morris. Can I go now?
Back to the news.
I have some Pathfindery style news.
Lots of news. There's still lots of news. How's there so much news this week?
Things have happened.
I've been saving it all up.
Things keep happening, yeah.
So,
okay.
Paizo. Of Pathfinder, but Paizo do more things. But anyway, they have announced a meta event, Pathfinder War of Immortals.
Mm.
So it's a big thing happening in the Pathfinder world, which will feature the death of a core deity, which will be a big deal. So it's kicking off with, there's a book, Pathfinder, the War of Immortals, which is coming in October 2024, which is this year. For those that time travel and not sure where we are. The book has loads of mythic rules and it's got new classes to the game. Loads of stuff kind of in there. And interestingly, they are playtesting upcoming classes, the Guardian and the Commander, later this month on the 29th of April. So if you want to check them out and playtest them, if you go to paizo.com/Pathfinder playtest, you can get involved and do that there.
Mm-hmm. Something I find slightly confusing about this.
Mm-hmm.
So, unless I'm completely misunderstanding or misreading something. So, this Pathfinder War of the Immortals, the basic concept is one of the gods, like you said, gets killed. Gorum, the death, the god of war, gets killed.
Yes.
And Pathfinder War of the Immortals is a hardcover book which explores Gorum's death and the ramifications.
Yeah.
But it's a rule book. It's not a adventure book.
Yeah.
And it looks like the death of the god only happens off screen in, they've been publishing something called the God's Reign Prophecies, a series of false prophecies about the potential deaths of gods on their blog, marking one god safe each week, which culminated with the death of Gorum, God of War.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I just would have thought that would be an adventure path.
Yeah.
Where that happened, rather than just something that happened on their blog. Oh. Unless I'm missing something.
Hmm. Wow.
There is an adventure, Pray for Death, so...
Okay.
P-R-E-Y.
Yeah, it's not connected to that, though.
No.
Is that not connected? I thought it was. Oh, so that's 14th level characters.
Yeah, no, it's not connected to the...
Are you sure? Because Pray for Death sounds very much like a death of gods.
Yeah, no, it was Pray as in P-R-E-Y.
Yeah, I thought it was a pun.
As in Red Mantis.
Yeah, I know. I thought it was a pun.
Yeah. It is a pun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, but this is going to affect future adventures and adventure paths and things. There is a second adventure path that ties in with the War of Immortals. It's Pathfinder's Adventure Path number 41, Triumph of the Tusk. And it's a
Triumph of the Tusk?
Yes. Ooh, and it is an adventure path of 3rd to 11th level characters.
Mm.
So this is, they're fighting alongside orcs in the War of Independence as the war rages around Golarion.
Oh, I see.
And so it looks like that is what you were thinking does exist.
Okay.
And there is also going to be a novel, which is another tie-in to this big event happening, Pathfinder God's Reign, which is a novel by the Pathfinder writer Leanne Mercil.
Mm.
So yeah, so pretty much they're basically changing the setting and the canon in the world, which will have an impact on playable characters, you know, the world's setting, and there's an adventure path with it. So, yeah. And they're going to talk more about it at PaizoCon, Gen Con, and they have a monthly talk show, Paizo Live. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So that's a big thing that's happening in Pathfinder if you play.
Do either of you two like whiskey?
Not really. I won't lie.
I do, actually, but I didn't for years, and I discovered that I just had to add more water to it, so it goes from tasting of burning actually having quite a pleasant taste.
Like whiskey squash.
Not that much water.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Right, you're not proposing to add squash to a whiskey.
Oh, no, not like butternut squash. I more meant like a cordial.
So Critical Role is releasing its own whiskey. And you can buy a bottle of it for $99.99.
That's quite cheap for whiskey.
$100?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I thought it was $19.99.
$99.99.
Oh, I misheard you. This is like $100. Yeah, I thought what you were saying, like, it was like $20, and I was like, oh, that's quite cheap.
No,
I misheard.
That's the thing, it's quid, like, accurate exchange rates.
No, it's $100, and it is...
Must be good stuff.
It's inspired by a drink purchased by Grog during the game, produced in the deserts of Marquette from the Bile of the Sand Keg.
Well, Grog is like rum, lime juice, and hot water.
No, Grog is a character.
That's the name of a character.
It's a person.
But you know what? Both of these things can be true at the same time.
Yes.
But in this context, it's a character.
Right. Sorry, I was confused. Yeah. I was like, but Grog isn't made with whiskey. But all right. So Grog.
The character.
The rum-based
The character Grog.
That is named Grog.
Yes.
Has got himself some whiskey. Or herself. Yes. Or themselves.
Yes. 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 Correct. Well, the real world version is from a blender called Ale Ochoa, and it's a cask-finished bourbon aged 4+ years in sherry and vermouth barrels with notes of baked apple, brown spice, shortbread cookie, and oak.
Okay. That does sound nice, but I'm not really that into whiskey. And
that's too complicated for me.
If I buy a bottle of spirits, I don't spend $100 on it, and that might say more about me than the drinks.
I don't
either. Yeah, I just...
Good financial decisions, apparently.
Well, you know, like, I don't know. I'm going to buy a bottle of gin later when I do my food shop, and it's not going to cost me $100.
Don't like whiskey or gin. I like vodka. Don't mind vodka.
Would you spend $100 on
it? Mainly because it doesn't really taste of anything.
That's true, it doesn't, yeah.
And here I am brewing my own mead like a sap.
I like mead as well.
Oh, no, I'll drink... Yeah, that's not a spirit, though, is it?
Oh, no.
Depends how much PJ brews it. Yeah. With a homebrew, could be that strength. Depends
how concentrated it is.
Could be that strength.
I can't distill it, and I'm not 100% on legality. I am 100% that I do not want to have alcohol vapors in my own physical house as I own. That shit goes outside.
Well, you have a medic on hand, so it's fine.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean I do if my house is burnt down.
Anyway, that was Critical Role whiskey. We've also got something about D&D and mental health.
I saw this, yes.
Well, seeing your friends is good for your mental health.
Probably, yeah.
having social activity is good for mental health.
There's a study, it was published, I mean, yeah, you've summarised it, but yeah. A study was published in Games for Health Journal titled A Study on the Efficacy of the Tabletop Role-Playing Game Dungeons and Dragons for Improving Mental Health and Self-Concepts in a Community Sample.
Cool.
And this study was by Alice A. Merrick, Wendy Wen Lee, and Dan J. Miller.
Mm-hmm.
And they had 25 participants who played D&D for 1 hour a week for 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And they did surveys before, during, and after the game sessions.
1 hour a week? Yeah, I mean, sure. Okay, yeah.
They all played the same module.
Right.
In the same location. According to the study, participants demonstrated significant decreases in depression, stress, and anxiety, and significant increases in self-esteem and self-efficacy over the study period.
Well, it's like PJ said, having regular social interactions in real life with people is good for you. Yeah, and I can see why tabletop RPGs play into that, because if you're just trying to hang out with people or your friends, sometimes it's easy to go weeks not meeting up and doing things because life is busy. Mm. But if you say, we're going to play this campaign, you have an excuse and a reason and a commitment to meet up every week. And that just means you make sure you hang out.
You see your friends, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there are other hobbies and ways to do that.
I mean, it's not a big sample. Yeah. It's only 25 participants and only 1 hour a week for 8 weeks. Yeah. So, as part of me goes, is that enough to really derive that conclusion? But I'm not a statistical expert.
It's like qualitative data.
Yeah.
And also it's basically surveys, isn't it?
Yeah, self-reporting
that. But I think if you did that with any hobby, it's like we meet up once a week and do knitting together for an hour or whatever your other hobby is. I think having a regularly scheduled time slot in person to meet with people just means it happens.
Yeah, so I'm assuming it's not Dungeons & Dragons specifically and not any other role-playing game.
Well, they got
they use Dungeons & Dragons in the experiment, so I guess that's all they can report. But they did say the role of TTRPGs when I read the little extract from it. But,
it'd be good to see, do different role-playing game systems have a different effect on your mental health.
Oh, they absolutely would. If you're playing
Call of Cthulhu.
I can think of even more. That's a
detrimental effect.
You're playing Our Arms Are Empty every week. That will not make you happy.
Yes. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. But I think that's just, I think definitely for me, because it's a good way. I think, especially when you're an adult, sometimes it's really hard to find community, and tabletop role-playing games are a great way to do that. Just like the club you run, PJ. I imagine that does a lot for people.
Especially having a hobby which involves other people.
Yeah, having a hobby that involves other people, you regularly go to.
You could be playing football, you could be whatever, but it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. I haven't read the study, so I don't know. Because they didn't do any sort of test with things other than Dungeons & Dragons, at least according to that summary. So whether that necessarily Dungeons & Dragons was better at it than, say, chess or football.
Yeah.
It's hard to tell.
My speculation is that would not be the case. Because if it's something that captivates your interest and you've got something in common with those people because you all have an interest in this thing and you're meeting up regularly, that'll do you good.
Yeah. Yeah. I think D&D is a particularly interactive hobby, whereas maybe some others are less interactive, maybe.
Pottery making? Book clubs,
You turned up to play football. If you turned up to play football for 1 hour a week for 8 weeks, and I think it's probably important that they're not counting interaction before or after the thing, because otherwise wouldn't that contaminate the results? So therefore, you can't count the camaraderie before or after the match or anything. It's just literally you've got to turn up, play football, and go home.
Oh, interesting.
Would you get as much interaction as you do when you do the same with D&D? Turn up, play D&D and go home and not have...
It does specifically involve talking to people. But I think there's a value in having people who are genuinely pleased to see you. They're like, oh, fantastic. You're here. We've got enough people.
I don't know. I wonder if... Because parallel play is very much the thing I like. When I hang out with my friends sometimes, we are in the same room doing our own activities, not necessarily talking, but that still is something I like doing. I had my friend over for a little LAN party where we played Baldur's Gate. We were both sat on computers playing the game, but in the same room. But that still felt, works for me.
But you have to communicate, though. I guess it's the communication that is probably the standout.
Whose turn is it to make the tea?
If I do this, you're making little plans, you're mostly communicating if there's some sort of combat in D&D, and then you require some very specific combat stuff to be going on, and you need to have communication going on, because people will be doing things, and someone's decisions will affect the possibility space of the things that you can do.
Mm. Arguably, and that is definitely true of other games. Arguably but, for football as well, because as a game, you're all trying to achieve a mutual goal of getting literally a goal.
That is true, but you're not. You're like doing a lot of intuition and
I don't play football, so I don't know.
Like, well, you're not having conversations. You don't have a, like a sit down and say, oh, "I'm going to pass it over to you."
Kick it here.
And then you do this and the other. Well, you pass it around, and then it's like based on your understanding of what's going on. But I'd say there's like less verbal communication going on.
Okay, fair enough. Anyway, that's interesting.
You can go right. Read the actual study. It's linked on that for great. Free, so you can go and actually read it.
More corporate news.
There is no more corporate news.
There is.
Which corporation?
All right.
Steve Jackson Games released their annual stakeholder report for 2023. It's interesting. They don't have to legally share their stakeholder report, but they choose to for transparency, which is a groovy thing to do.
It's a privately owned company, so it's not.
Anyway, so the summary is that Steve Jackson Games had a gross revenue of $3.5 million, and they posted a loss for the year. So they took that much money in, but they spent money on things. They have like 30 employees, so, you know, that's a thing. And one of the challenges cited is that printing and shipping costs have not returned to pre-pandemic levels, which as a fellow publisher, we can also agree that shipping and printing is expensive still. And, you know, when you make games and stuff, that's you have to do that. You can't opt out of that. But that's the main summary. So, you can read the full report on EN World. But, but that's kind of the top line level.
Yeah, that was interesting. It's like, I did read the thing. So basically, their TTRPG stuff, which is GURPS and the Fantasy Trip, both of those, they categorise these things like they've got like stuff that's really good and stuff that's like eh, and then stuff that's bad. And this was in the eh category. Like GURPS didn't release anything in 2023, and the Fantasy Trip didn't really sort of take off, I think, the way they wanted it to. And there was a Kickstarter, I think, was it last year or the year before? I can't remember when it was. But
It's longer than that, Russ. The Fantasy Trip. It's been a couple of years. But no, I know what you're talking about. I mean, the thing is, they make Munchkin as well.
It's
just like, if you're making Munchkin, a new set of Munchkin, it's just going to be so much, make you so much more money than making a role-playing game.
Munchkin did well, and Car Wars 6th Edition did well as well. So.
Oh, lovely.
So those games did well. The role-playing games sort of eh. The Munchkin and Car Wars did well. Yeah, I mean, they still say it's like a golden age for gamers at the moment, and like the industry as a whole. Even though there's all these distribution issues going on at the moment, and costs, and there's a lot of stuff going on, and a lot of companies cutting back on things and stuff. But they do say that, and they also say there's a secret project coming, which they say they can't really talk about yet. But basically, they're categorizing it as a failure because they invested an awful lot into it.
Right.
And they've had to kind of start again or something.
Ooh. Ow.
It wasn't up to their ideas of what a game in 2023 should look like.
Yeah. But we don't know what that is.
It looks like they've delayed a project to make it ready in time.
Yeah.
Which cost me. Which is, I think, the right thing to do. I mean, and I think sometimes, like, because originally we wanted to release Voidrunner's Codex last year, but it needed more work, so we spent the time working on it, and it's... happens with projects.
A bit of polishing on.
Yeah, because I think sometimes if you want to release a game, you're like, you know, I want it to be really good, and so I guess that's the thing they've done there.
I usually want it to be really good.
Yeah, I do too. Good.
Okay. Life-sized baby goblin.
What?
Would you like one?
No, thank
Jessica,
you.
Jessica, make coffee come spurting out of Jessica's nose like that.
It's tea. I would never drink coffee at 3:30 in the afternoon. Oh, I'm over the age of 30. I can't do that. thanks. So the way you said that was so like confused and like I wasn't prepared.
Well, I'm glad that I caught you out in such an entertaining manner.
Good.
So anyway, if you have got $130,
I do not
lying around.
I do not.
And a desire to have a life-sized foam baby goblin.
I do not.
But if you do.
Okay. If anyone listening is those things, yeah.
Then from WizKids, you can get the Pathfinder goblin.
Yes.
The iconic like design they've got for their goblins. You can get A life-size, well, I've said it like four times now, but a life-size foam baby goblin.
What is life-size? What scale is that? How
are we... For a goblin...
Because I don't imagine it's...
8 inches tall.
8 inches tall.
Which is about that big.
Russ is now holding his fingers, I would estimate, about...
Yeah, but he's on my computer screen, so it's hard to know.
20, 25 centimetres apart.
Oh, that's good. But centimetres is easier for me. I know how long a 30-centimetre ruler is, so...
Yeah.
Yes.
So...
Yeah. Well, that's a 12-inch
ruler. Two-thirds of that, so...
Okay, good to know.
Anyway.
How much does it cost?
You can have one. You can get one. $130.
$130, there we go.
$130, yeah. Yeah. If you want one. Which you don't.
No, I'm not.
Okay.
Other people will.
Okay. Other news. Got a bit of Kickstarter-y news. A little bit of Kickstarter-y news. Monsters of Drakenheim. Looks like it's going to probably hit the $1 million mark.
Oh, that's nice.
It's got 6 days to go. It's currently at $850,000.
Nice.
So if it doesn't, it will be very close. But it looks like it's going to hit. So that is the one from Ghostfire Gaming and Dungeon Dudes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's the one that advertises D&D Beyond compatibility on the actual Kickstarter, which I think we talked about recently. Mm. So this will be like Ghostfire Gaming and Dungeon Dudes and that lot, they've got loads of $1 million Kickstarters behind their back, behind under their belts now.
Yeah.
They just
good for them.
They've got it down to an art.
Mm.
Cool.
So that is probably going to be the next one, the next $1 million Kickstarter.
Nice.
And then we know that the Laundry RPG, we talked about that last week.
We did, yeah. I'm looking forward to that.
Conflict.
I haven't backed it yet because I'm still just looking in my purse, staring at it, and my purse, like, looking between the two. But I think I will be
your
backing
going,
that.
No, please, no, Jessica.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's because I bought my new dice organizer this month, and that was my kind of gaming budget splurge money.
Yeah. Gaming treat,
So I'm kind of like, I probably shouldn't.
I mean, I'm just so incredibly torn, but it's like having it would be good, but it's just like, I sort of would also want some adventures throughout the book, right? Because that's an easy in for me.
Yeah.
Mm. I know the lore pretty well, but like learning new system is, and having to teach new system as well, it's a lot to take on. I'm like, I can run these six systems, but it's easier if there's like a context to do it in. So I don't know.
I'm also talking myself out of it because I have four mini campaigns kind of I want to run that I've kind of got the stuff for that I just haven't organized to do. So if I add laundry to that laundry list of games.
It's a shame because it's really good setting.
Maybe I'll wait for retail when it comes out of retail because it's definitely funded on Kickstarter now, isn't it?
Kickstarter. We've also got Adventure Time, the role playing game. So you know the cartoon.
Is it the 5e one?
This is the 5e one. Yeah. That's killing it on Kickstarter as well. It's nearly $400,000 with nearly a month left to go. So that's doing really, really, really well. So basically, you can play in the land of Ooh using D&D 5th edition based on the Adventure Time cartoon, which I wish
with so much of my heart that had been the unique system. It was like the Yes And system they're talking about. And I know they're...
So they are still
going to do that. Yeah, I know, Russ. They said they're still going to do it. But I just don't think Adventure Time and 5e is the... I don't know. I just don't think it's the one.
I would describe it, never having seen anything on clips of Adventure Time, as it feels like there might be a tonal and potentially a thematic clash.
Yeah.
Because I don't feel, and maybe you know better than me, that there are like specifically classes baked into Adventure Time which would lend themselves easily to being replicated.
I mean, you could force it, like with anything. Yeah. You can force anything into the 5e mold because you can. But, I don't know. I just think there are some stories to be told that require a slightly different system from 5e. I feel like this was one of them. And I get why they've done the 5e one, because when you're publishing games, it sells more. Because that's what people want. But I just, But I'm not going to back that. I will back the Yes And system when that comes out.
Okay.
Sorry, I had big feelings about that I wasn't fully aware of.
No, fair. And the other interesting Kickstarter was the Field Guide to Floral Dragons.
That looks cool.
So this one's from Hit Point Press. Mm. And these are dragons inspired by real-world plants and flowers. And this one's done, like, nearly $700,000 already with 2 weeks to go.
Yeah.
So this is another one doing this. We've got three really, really big Kickstarters going on at the moment, three of which are potential million-dollar Kickstarters.
And another really big one is A Night in the Library that we are running as well.
It's not quite as big as that, though, is it?
It's got like $4,000 on it, I know. But yeah, I did it. I like it. Anyway, it's my little collection of things to populate your library with in your own game and world. So I like it. But yes, A Night in the Library is also live, but not a million-dollar Kickstarter, I understand.
No, it's not. And I think other than that, that's kind of like towards the end of the news. There was one last little thing that I wanted to mention. Was over on EN World, Echo Hawk has written an article about Quest of the Infinite Staircase.
Okay.
So basically, we know that Quest of the Infinite Staircase is an anthology of six older previous edition adventures.
Yeah.
So he's decided to dig out each of those adventures one at a time. He's only started with one so far, Before the Lost City, published in June 1982.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So he's gone through each of these. So he's going through each of these in time. And he's basically looking at the monsters specifically.
Okay.
Just to see potentially what monsters, new monsters and things, we can expect to see in Quests from the Infinite Staircase.
Mm.
So this isn't insider knowledge or anything. It's just, you know, we know what the adventure names are. So he's dug out the old versions, looked at it and thought, okay, these are probably the monsters we're going to see in that hardcover.
The Perils reprinting, you get spoilers.
Yeah. So in this one, we've got a banshee, but not the banshee that's in the monster manual, a different banshee.
Mm-hmm.
We have got a werefox.
Okay.
We have got a Polymar.
Okay.
Which is an underwhelming version of the Mimic. A more sociable version of the Mimic.
Okay.
Yeah.
When it says more sociable, so, will it not just immediately eat you and attack you then?
That is not a question that I can answer.
Okay. Well, thank you for your honesty.
I do not know.
Maybe it's a socially awkward Mimic, and like you're like fiddling around with it, you're like, I don't understand, this chest isn't open. It's just the Mimic's there sitting there keeping its mouth shut.
Me as a Mimic.
It's too embarrassed to
sorry.
The Dreadlord ordeal being perceived.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, so that's the new ones. And then there's a big old list of other monsters which are already in D&D.
Yeah.
Sorry, I won't bother going through those.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they've got the new ones.
Uh-huh.
There's a whole big old list there. We got white apes and rock baboons, and we've got driver ants and killer bees, and we've got thules and caecilia worms and bone golems and devil swines, wood golems, and Zargon, a 15-foot tall humanoid figure with the head of a lizard, a single red eye, a single sharp horn, six taloned tentacles instead of arms, and six more tentacles instead of legs. And as he points out, I don't quite understand how you call that humanoid, but still.
Let's not judge.
Yeah.
Well, there we go.
We try not to body shame.
There we go. That was a thing. So that's not news. That's speculation. But okay. I thought I'd mention it.
Yes, interesting speculation based on previous adventures.
Yeah. And I think we are now done with the news. I think we are finished.
I have nothing else to share with you this week.
Peter, do you have any more?
I'm tapped out.
Okay.
Well, but I mean, I'm preparing to do a bit of playtesting for the Voidrunners Codex. Quite excited about that.
Ooh.
See what fresh horrors my players can find to unleash.
Mm-hmm.
And vice versa.
Yes. Love that.
Yeah.
Okay. Right then. Let's get out of here then, shall we?
Let's leave. Alrighty.
Well, everyone enjoy your weekends.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. Thank you too for talking in that way that you do.
You're welcome.
Move your lips. When you move your lips and sound comes out of
I'm
them.
Starting to feel I'm always. Now.
I'm always.
Yeah.
Can I leave now?
It's been a long. Yeah. It's been a long week.
All right. Let's leave the room quiet. Right.
Have a good weekend.
Bye.
See you later. Bye. Bye.
Apparently, I now have to read this to you. This is the official podcast of Morris's unofficial tabletop RPG news, which you can find at enworld.org. You can find show notes at morris.podbean.com or wherever you found the podcast. If you feel like they deserve it, you can support the show on Patreon. In return, you will receive exclusive bonus content. Just go to patreon.com/morris. If you're interested in his babbling nonsense, you can follow @Morris on the Twitter. Send your emails to morrispodcast@gmail.com. Not all of your emails, just the ones you want us to see. That's it. I'm bored now. You can go away. Shoo, off you go. Goodbye. Get out of here.
I was involved in a TPK just like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, I'm so sorry for your loss.
Recently, anyway.
Was this at the club?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was playing a...
When I hear club, I thought playing, like a nightclub. And there's pictures you all there like at the bottom.
Yes.
Roll. Yeah. But you meant the TTRPG clubs, Southampton Guild of Roleplayers. Yeah.